Yesterday I've been watching the TV to get a call.
A call in. We should do like an hour on the radio show, the local radio, Morbay Radio, and make people call in and ask sports, recreation, and parks questions.
Well, they do.
We don't have any answers. We'll get back to you next week.
Sam. Excuse me, Sam. When are you on the radio? On Saturday morning? Or what's it?
What time?
In the park.
Monday morning.
Monday mornings?
Yeah, 8.
Okay. I think we're up. Okay. Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of Morro Bay Recreation Parks Commission. Today is Thursday, January 31st, 2016. We have a quorum. The only one missing today is Mr. Al Romeo. If you might, I would like to observe a moment of silence, please. Okay, thank you very much. Now I'd like to lead us in the Pledge of Alliance. So, you with allegiance, sorry.
All right. Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have any announcements and presentations from
Mr. Chairperson? I'd like to welcome Mr. Timothy Ross, our newest commissioner.
Yeah.
I think he's been out of the area, and we are so appreciative you volunteered your time, as all the other folks here have. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you and welcome. So any announcements or presentations from the commission? Anybody got anything good? No?
Yeah, I stopped one day out at the new bike.
So did I. It looks pretty good.
Really nice. Yeah. Met one of the parents, and they were really elated with that. And there was somebody out there working today on it too. Doing some kind of brick or something like that. So really a nice addition for the kids.
Yep, sure is. They did a nice job. Anything else here? No. I think we can open up to public comment. If you would, come up to the microphone and state your name, and we have like a 3-minute timer, so you get 3 minutes.
Good evening, Commissioners. Trina Doherty, resident of Morro Bay. I'm actually here to speak on item C8, which I will not be able to stay for since it's the last item on the agenda, and I'm wondering if I might have your permission, as is done at City Council meetings, to still speak on this item.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I'm currently president of two organizations mentioned in the staff report on item C8, Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay and the Friends of the Library. Beginning with the Eco Rotary Club, I would like to correct a statement that is in the staff report, which states that we do not have to provide insurance. And this is actually not the case, as we are covered under the Rotary International Insurance Policy, and we have provided all documentation every year in the permitting process to provide that coverage. We truly have enjoyed the meeting space as provided to us at no charge since, I believe, 2012. This is the community center lounge area. Our club is small with an equally small budget, and this has really helped us to minimize our costs and put our limited funds to good use in our community. As mentioned in the staff report, various agreements have been made over the years, and we may certainly fall into that category. We've been in the Adopt-a-Park program since early on in our club's history, and it was our understanding that while not a formal agreement, our use of the meeting space totaling 4 hours a month was in some way an exchange, if you will, for our 8 hours a month commitment to maintaining Bayshore Bluffs Park. We are aware that this may have just simply been an understanding and that no contract to that effect has ever been formalized. That assumption has become the common practice, and we've had no inkling that was ever an issue. We would greatly appreciate the continued use of the Community Center Lounge at no charge. Should there be fees incurred, we will, of course, need to review and discuss whether we could continue to meet there. As with all nonprofits, service to the community is our main purpose for most organizations, and the Friends of the Library is no exception. in large part with funds from our many book sales held at the community center over the years, we managed to completely finance the beautiful remodel of our beloved library. Now that the remodel is complete, we still have many ways in which we help the library, programs and additional materials included. It must be said that the recent increase in the fees to use that facility for our large sales greatly affected our decision as to whether to continue holding them at the community center. While our next sale will actually be held at the library, we would hope that the consideration be made to either waive these costs or keep them at a considerably reduced rate. Our goal is to use our funds for the betterment of the library services to everyone in our community, and it's become more difficult to justify those costs with the rate increases. So thank you very much for your consideration tonight.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Okay, are there any more public comments? No? Okay, thank you. I'll move on to the consent calendar. Approval of minutes for September only. The November minutes aren't actually in here. So, I mean, you get a vote on that, correct? Approval of minutes.
Correct.
Yes.
So and as a note, we actually have two copies of the September minutes in there, so you're
right.
Not voting on November this evening.
Correct. So may I get a vote on that? All in favor? Aye. All opposed? Nay. It passes. Thank you. Okay. Staff reports. Okay, so we're to staff reports now?
You're now to item C1.
C1, program events, evaluation, team action club. Okay. Staff have any comments on them? These?
Yeah, we'll have Karen and Heather give an overview of those staff reports prior to your receiving and filing, which is our staff recommendation.
Okay.
So, good evening. I'll start with the Teen Action Club report. I'm going to skip down just right to the discussion part, and I think that is most notable, that during the summer of 2015, the Teen Action Club provided the following volunteer services. They assisted with the Morro Bay 4th of July celebration for a total of 52 hours. What we did was a lot of fun. We did the kitty carnival, games, prizes, face painting, that kind of fun stuff. They also assisted with the Rock to Pier run, as well as Special Olympics when the Special Olympics came to town for their special day. And we, the Teen Action Club is also an Adopt a Park group. And during the summertime, we volunteered 51 hours taking care of Lila Kaiser Park. And the other important part I wanted to point out is that our volunteer hours keep growing each year. As you look in the report, you can see when we started in 2010, we just had 18 hours, but then we bumped up the next year to 51, 75, and so forth to 2014, 149 hours. The TAC meets the Morro Bay Recreation and Parks Department mission statement by providing quality opportunity that is essential and necessary to live a healthy and rich life. Staff will continue to provide the opportunity to our community teenagers in a responsive and courteous manner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. I have a question. The Teen Action Club, what's the membership numbers?
It's really whatever teenager that comes to the teen center wants to sign up to volunteer for whatever the activity is. So when you ask me what is the membership, well, I would say it's like 150 kids, but really we probably bring like 8 or 6 or 10 depending on the activity.
So it's really more of a drop-in sign-up program for volunteerism?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right. And the next... Okay.
Okay, so may a motion to receive and file C1? Right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None? Thank you.
Okay. All right, so the next report that we have for you is on the girls' softball program. And I do want to point out with the girls' softball program that in the report you're going to see a couple different cost analysis, because we have the regular season, which is a general fund-sponsored program, and then we have all-star season and our tournament, which are not part of the general fund. So they are required to have 100% cost recovery for those parts of the program. So in the regular season last year, we had 103 girls from ages 5 to 14 participating in the league, which that included two teams of girls from Cambria. We played games with San Luis girls softball, Napomo, and Five Cities and Templeton with the older girls, and are looking forward to doing the same again this coming season. After the regular season, we had four all-star teams, or at least we started out with four all-star teams. We ended up losing one because ASA changed some of the eligibility rules, and our team wasn't able to find any local tournaments in the age group and the division they got bumped up to. We did have one team go to the association championships and on to the California State Games. They earned a berth to go there. During the regular season, our cost recovery for the program was 92%, and we were set to recover 70 to 79% of our costs. We also couldn't do that without all our volunteers, and girls softball is a program that we have sponsors for every team. So we help keep the costs down for the girls. But we also have sponsors to help cover the cost of the equipment and the ASA registration and things like that. Then you also see that our All-Star program, they did a lot of fundraising to cover their costs to go to the California State Games. So you'll see that there is a lot of tournament fees, but things that they did. They had a barbecue and Sylvester's and just other fundraising. They did a barbecue at Miners, so we had a lot of community help and support getting the girls to these games. Then we also host a softball tournament every year. This past year we had 29 teams, 26 paying because three of them were ours, we look forward to having that tournament again this year. And that program also is 100% cost recovery, and we do make a little bit on that that goes back into the program to help feed the next year, to help cover some of the costs for All-Stars. Just our big thing to know that we're going to be replacing the little riding lawnmower that we have out at Sunnyside this year, so there will be a big kind of chunk to pay for that because it's being held together with rubber bands and chewing gum, so to speak. We are hopefully going to be working with Morobe High School to offer a skills clinic for our girls. We are working on trying to deal with our issues of our sheds being broken into and generators being stolen from the fields. So we are working on trying to come up with another more secure way to handle storing the equipment. More high-end equipment.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Uh-huh. Congratulations to the ladies for making state.
Yes.
And don't break in and steal stuff from
That's
the kids.
Right. Bad. Yes.
Okay. Any other comments from commission?
I'm sorry, but I do.
Yeah.
Do we have any type of activity or way in which we show our appreciation to the sponsors of the softball teams?
Yes, we get team pictures from each of the teams, and we also make banners. And at the end of the season, a lot of the teams, the kids will sign them, and they will take them to the sponsors as a thank you at the end of the season. Yes.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Any other comments? No? Okay. May I get a vote to receive and file item C2? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None. Thank you.
Okay. And then the next report is on youth soccer. And again, youth soccer, Stairway Youth Soccer, is a program like girls softball that we have an all-star program as well. So you'll see in the financial part, you'll see two different sets of numbers. In this past year, we had 176 boys and girls ages 4 to 14 playing. We had U6 all the way up to U14. This year, to help us decrease the cost on painting the fields, we bought some lines that you can just roll out every week, and that saved a big chunk on both staff time and on just the buying the spray paint to cover the season. We did have to paint our larger U12, U14 field just because they don't make the porta fields in that size. But it did work well, and we'll look at using them again this next year. Our all-star team, we had one all-star team this season, and they participated in two tournaments. This year, in lieu of doing any fundraising, the team chose to have everyone pitch in to cover the cost of the tournaments and their uniforms. You will see on there that our Youth Sports Trust Fund covered a little bit of the cost of that, because when we started out, we had four more children. So when we ordered the uniforms and figured out the cost to split amongst the kids, we did it with four additional kids, and so we did have a little money in our Youth Sports Trust Fund to help cover, to make up that when the kids didn't end up playing. So regular season is a merit service program with the cost recovery of 70 to 79, and we recovered 95%. And then the all-star season with the addition from the Youth Sports Trust Fund, we did break even on that one. So that is our all-star soccer and regular season soccer program. And I just have one more comment about girls softball. Just a reminder, registration ends next Friday with assessments on Saturday at Lila Kaiser. So if you want to sign up for softball, give us a call and we'll get you all signed up.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any comments?
I have one comment. Not about soccer. I was going to jump in for baseball, but I forgot. Have we ever checked into the Senior Baseball Association tournaments? The reason I ask that is I know they bring a lot of people in, and they're a group that kind of stay for a weekend instead of maybe come in for the day and play and go home, because they come in and might bring more revenue to the city.
Yes, we have Triple Crown Baseball comes and uses our field. I believe the date that they're planning for this next year is the end of July, and we have had inquiries with another group that wants to bring a baseball tournament. The problem with our fields are they're a little short for the older kids, so it's usually an 11 or 12-year-old boys baseball that can use our fields. For the girls tournament, we bring in 29 teams for the weekend, and we use six fields to cover that.
Okay, I meant 55 and older.
Oh, senior, 55 and older.
Senior.
Oh, yeah.
We can use short fields.
Yeah, no, yes. Sorry, I think it's senior baseball. We have ASA brings like 5 to 6 senior tournaments here during the year. They're one every month. They have one in June, July, August, September, and they had to cancel their November and December ones this year, but because of lack of participation. But we typically have at least one a month from June on.
Do they seem to bring in pretty good revenue when they do that?
Yes.
I mean, as far as overall city, restaurants and hotels, man?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one additional note there, too, is this year we've had a substantial amount of reservations for both our facilities and our parks. For comparison, last year for facilities, we brought in about $10,000 mid-year for reservations for our facilities. We're about $17,000 this year. Staff here believes we're having one of the busiest years we've ever had. And that's despite, obviously, a little bit of an increase in some of our fees where people are really utilizing our stuff. I think part of that is the marketing we're doing, and so we're pretty happy with that.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, we get a vote to recommend we receive and file C3. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Thank you. Received and filed. All right, C4. Naming parks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. So I didn't include this in the report, I realized, but part of the reason why this is before you is We had a discussion previously last year about potentially renaming City Park Franklin Riley Park after the founder of Morro Bay. And kind of what came out of that conversation at the time was, well, we have a policy about why you, or when it's acceptable to name a park after a person, but what's the administrative route for that suggestion or request to get to you and the council? And we didn't really have any guidance in that vein. So what staff kind of did was we reviewed some of the other ways that we bring these to you, and probably the most logical connected way or process would be the public art policy. And that policy is regarding the donation of art to the city. We have an application process for that, where someone wants to donate art and they submit that to us and we review it and then bring it through various advisory bodies. We're actually going to be talking about that policy this evening as well. I'm sure you saw that in the packet, but that's the most logical comparison. So with that in mind, the task you kind of gave us to bring back to you was, let's try to devise an administrative policy. It also just seemed to make sense to kind of clean up this policy a little bit to make sure it was really clear when someone can do it. So in the past, when you looked at the section of the resolution from 1980 on naming, it said there were three ways that, I guess three exceptions to the policy that a facility, a park, or an amenity basically had to be named after a geological location or its use. So for instance, we're not going to call it the Sam Taylor building. It's going to be called City Hall because it's a city hall. And that's the policy. But three exceptions allow you to name it after a person. The first being that the person has been primarily instrumental in obtaining donation of funds or land for the facility. The second is the person donates the land or funds to purchase the land and desires to have the facility named in his or her honor. The third being a person has been deceased for more than 2 years and the city council believes the person's contribution to the aspect of the city which the facility represents were of such a value to the city that the person's memory should be honored by naming of the facility. In the old resolution, I should back up. In the version that's before you this evening, for each one of those three, we've added the word or. In the version from 1980, it just said there's these three exceptions, but you could read it in one of two ways. Either you could qualify by one of those, or you had to qualify by all. So did you have to be dead and donate land and be instrumental, or could you just be dead? So we wanted to clean it up to make sure that someone could qualify in each one of those ways. That's how staff has interpreted this in the past, I believe. So that just made some common sense. With also adopting this new version of the resolution, you're also recommending to City Council adoption of the naming policy itself. I literally took the public art naming policy, plopped it down, cleaned it up to be called the public property naming policy. It's got a very similar thing to it. And what we're asking an applicant basically is to say, come tell us why you want to name this after a person. Who were they? How were they involved in the project? Or how were they involved in the city that would make them qualify? So we want them to give us the biography and the history of that person. When someone comes to ask us for this, just to put it bluntly, probably the onus probably shouldn't completely be on staff to have to research why that person qualifies. We want the person asking us to make the case. So that's what we're doing here. We also are cleaning up a little bit of the language from the art policy where it was kind of unclear if someone made an application in the art policy for this, it was unclear if we had to bring it forward or if we could basically make a determination first if the application was complete. In staff's opinion, it's more appropriate to ensure an application is complete, answers all of the relevant questions, and qualifies to be brought forward prior to just any application coming to you. Because then anyone could apply at any time, not have any answers related to the funding of that project, etc. That does not mean technically that someone can go to the council or the mayor and ask for something to be on the agenda. Someone can technically do that at any time. They just have to get, I think, at least two council members to put it on an agenda or the mayor. In this case, we're trying to just make sure it's a clean, easy to understand process, that all of the relevant questions are answered prior to it coming to the RPC as well as the council. So that's it in a nutshell. Basically, in the future, should you make a recommendation of yes to this policy, that the council adopt this, and the council adopts it, I think staff believes it will really clean it up and streamline it for us.
Okay. I think we might vote common sense this time. Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
Say, for instance, I win the lotto and I give you some property. Is there some way? So I give you a big vacant land, but then the development of that land is the city's responsibility because, you know, most time the city doesn't have that money. Is there a way you could put, say, an endowment in that, say, money is there to develop it?
We actually can do that through the city. We actually have basically kind of trust funds set up within the city budget where folks donate money and we collect it over time. And so likely what would happen is some type of contractual agreement where we say you're donating this to us, both the land, and then we're creating, you know, maybe you want to set the seed money for that endowment and we'd like to keep building on it prior to development. So, yeah, that's possible.
So it's an option. It's not like a requirement. If you give us some land, at least give us some kind of extra money to help.
There's no requirement for when someone donates land that we also require them to give us money to develop that. No. It doesn't mean we have to accept the property. That would be a discussion for the council.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Do I have a vote to accept C4? Or to put on a city council that,
I make the motion.
You make the motion?
Yeah.
Do we get a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passed.
Thank you, commissioners. Item C5 would be the recommendation from staff that RPC members should recommend to city council that they must adopt a resolution regarding, or not they must, that they adopt a resolution regarding the city's art policy, including the updates to the policy. I touched on quite a bit of it actually in the last one, so that'll cut down, but the council in 2006 adopted the art policy. The document is, I'm unclear actually if they adopted the document itself or just verbally said yes to it. We didn't adopt it by resolution at that time. We've started doing a lot more resolution adoption of things. It just helps with record keeping, and so staff is recommending that we take the current art policy, make some minor revisions to it, and adopt it by resolution. The biggest part, I think, of the art policy that was modified is that in the past, when someone wanted to donate a piece of art to the city, the path of their application started with the city manager's office. It's pretty likely that the city manager's office simply passed it on to the Recreation and Services Division and for them to process, and then we brought it to RPC and any other relevant advisory body. What the policy said, though, was it started at city manager's office, and then not only that, every single city advisory body was supposed to consider that application for donated public art. Staff doesn't believe that it makes a lot of sense for every advisory body to consider public art. In a lot of cases, it's not necessarily directly relevant to that advisory body. For instance, the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee has a pretty specific mission related to reviewing our budget. They get in the details of the budget. I don't think it would be necessarily appropriate for them to get in the weeds on a specific piece of art. So what we've done is we've modified the language to say that city staff shall place the application on the agenda of the Recreation and Parks Commission and any other relevant advisory body for their comments. Input shall be encouraged from the Morro Bay Art Association and the public at large. So we think this makes the process clearer, easier to understand, and probably a little bit more efficient. Also, it's probably exactly what we've been doing, so we just want to make sure that the policies reflect practice, or I should say practice reflects policy.
Would you restate that whole process of reviewing with the art association, is that what you said?
Yeah. So
is it required or is it recommended?
Input shall be encouraged from the Morro Bay Art Association. Yeah. So we would work actively to try to get their input on that piece of art.
Yeah. We'd also want public input on that.
Absolutely.
It's going to be in the public. But, yeah, this seems to make good sense. And it... It's probably actually what we were doing, so good to get it in writing. Any comments? No? May I get a motion to accept or to recommend city councils?
I still make that motion.
Do I get a second?
Second.
You get a second? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, commissioners, for being so efficient.
Passed.
Item C6. Consideration of recommendation to City Council regarding the naming of the new bike park as the Bonnie Johnson Community Bike Park. For full disclosure, Ms. Johnson is in the audience is super embarrassed about this and doesn't want it to happen, but this is not her decision. So I just want to make that clear. We've had a request from the Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers related to naming the bike park the Bonnie Johnson Community Bike Park. And as we just reviewed regarding our public property naming policy, the past policy plus the one that you're recommending that council approve, one of the ways that folks are included or considered for that naming is how instrumental they are in the project. And there's no doubt, 100%, that Bonnie Johnson was absolutely fully instrumental in making sure over a three-year period that this bike park came to fruition. It was really Bonnie's work and the city council being willing to agree to set aside public property that made it happen. So it was really that combined effort by the council and Bonnie. The Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers have a current contract with the city of Morro Bay related to maintenance, signage, upkeep of the park. So they fully realize that if they would like to change the signage that they actually just put up to Bonnie Johnson Community Bike Park, they will pay for that, and they are fully ready and willing to do so. So with that, it's staff's recommendation as well that we enthusiastically recommend that you recommend to City Council that the new BMX bike park be named the Bonnie Johnson Community Bike Park. And you may have some public comment that's not Bonnie, because I've asked her not to come up and try to convince you otherwise.
Okay. One other question. Is there any place that if they get sponsors for this down the road that they could put up the sponsors' names?
I believe so. They put up some amazing signage, and
it's pretty cool.
There may be signage already for sponsors on that big board. Yes,
okay.
There is.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, any comments, any ideas? What are you guys thinking?
I think after.
I'm in agreement that we name it.
Yeah.
Bonnie
Sorry,
Park.
You may have some public comment as well, so you might want to check for public comment.
May I have public comments, please? Open the floor. Please state your name when you address them.
Thank you. My name's Robert Davis. I live in Morro Bay. I chair the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee, and I want to tell you that the Citizens Bike Committee enthusiastically supports staff recommendation that we name the park after Bonnie Johnson for all of the relentless hard work that she performed to bring it to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your comment. Are there any other comments? No? Well, yes. Okay. No? No. Okay.
I do have a comment.
Okay.
Under the exceptions in the public, bear with me, I'll get there. Under the recommendation for the park naming policy, it very clearly says that the person who donates the land, for example, and desires to have their name fully associated with it. So in one way, we very much appreciate that someone's name is in consideration when they desire it. But I think I heard there may be some reluctance on Bonnie's part to have her name affiliated with it.
Thank you. That's a very good question, yes. Commissioner Ross. And so I will say, first, we very much appreciate the humility of Ms. Johnson. And we're honoring her for that humility, I think. I also will technically point out that number two, related to the person's donating the land and desiring to have it in their name, is not how we're making the recommendation this evening. We are technically making the recommendation on point one, which the person has been primarily instrumental in obtaining donations of funds or land for the facility. So their desire is not included in number one.
Right.
Yeah. Just wanted to acknowledge that. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion that we recommend to the council that we thought it was on. Sorry. I'd like to make a recommendation to the council that we do, in fact, name the bike park after Bonnie Johnson.
Do I hear a second? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None.
Thank you, commissioners. I do want to note, Bonnie truly is not in this for the glory of it all, and I know that she's... This is hard for her, but I think folks just wanted to recognize the hard work of it. So thank you all.
Okay. Signature events.
Item C7 related to the consideration of city signature events. The city has been working for some time to ensure that we have a specific focus on resident/community-focused events. We have many events in the community that are visitor-serving events, and part of it is we are a large tourist destination. But we also recognize the need to ensure that there are community activities for our residents, particularly our families and our retirees. And so we know that other communities throughout the Central Coast do have some signature events that they focus staff time, resources on, and we thought it would be appropriate to make sure that we also kind of make a declarative statement about where we would focus our resources. This conversation really began after the 4th of July this year. We had kind of an unfortunate situation, but also an opportunity that worked out really well to manage the 4th of July at Tylenz Park. We had two council members, Councilmember Johnson and Councilmember Smuckler, who really spearheaded the overall management of that, but staff kind of backed them up. And as we downloaded on the event afterward, it became clear that we felt comfortable managing that event annually with the help of volunteers, just as we did this year. Along with that, we wanted to kind of make a determination about other signature community events that would be resident serving. And so with that, there are several events that we either do now or we would like to partner with community organizations. And we already have been in discussions with those other organizations about potential partnerships in the future. The events include the 4th of July at Tidelands Park, the Brian Waterbury Memorial Rock to Pier Fun Run, which we obviously already do. We consider that both a community and visitor-serving event, but it is definitely a big community event. The Halloween Trick or Treat, which is managed by the Chamber of Commerce. It was amazing this year, and we would like to continue to help them make it even more amazing. And the Lighted Boat Parade and Tree Lighting, which is done by Rotary Club, also an amazing event. We definitely get people from out of the area on that, but it is definitely also a big community event. The experience we had this year was a debate about if we do our own tree lighting, which the city has done in the past at City Park, or try not to step on the toes of the Light a Boat Parade. And in past years, we actually had a rather large separation between the timing of the two events, several hours, so that folks could come to our tree lighting and then run down to the piers and find parking with their kids and get ready for that. And it just made sense for us not to step on toes of these hardworking volunteers and to see where we could enhance partnership. So we have had initial discussions with them about future years. They seem excited to partner with us, and we're very, very excited to do what we can. Not every partnership will necessarily mean budgeted money for that event, for that support. It doesn't mean it won't as well. That's a discussion that will come with council at budget time each year. But we do feel comfortable in waiving permit fees. The fees are generally fairly low for the events that are private right now. We feel comfortable with police and public works staffing for those. And in the future, maybe it does mean budgetary resources. Again, that's a conversation to come. It was pointed out to me by my staff this evening, and I forgive me for the oversight, but there's one other event that maybe you want to consider including in your recommendation, and that's the Dixon Spaghetti Feed Dinner. That is a rather large community event in the community. How many people come to that each?
About 400.
It's about 400 people, and that's very substantial for a community serving event. And so we'd encourage you to include maybe in your motion that you approve this resolution with an amendment regarding the spaghetti dinner. I should note also that this resolution is in line with a proposed objective on this upcoming fiscal year with goals and objectives by the council to basically undertake these events. So this resolution is a good kind of starting point to undertaking that objective of making sure that we fulfill our duties in having these events come to fruition or partnering. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. This obviously does not discuss all of the other types of events that are visitor serving, but these would be our signature city events, similar to the way Pismo has Pumpkins on the Pier. It's a community event.
Pier. Okay. Have we been in touch with the tourism office to get their input on this too? Since there's a lot of things that go on right here that aren't parks and recreation that are, you know, bring a lot of people down here. All sorts of food events and other things.
We haven't specifically discussed this with the tourism office because this is, again, more community-focused events.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're happy to continue to market them as wide as we want. Just we know that our residents are very deserving of events, too. and we want to focus on them.
Okay.
I have a question. You mentioned the lighted Christmas tree. Is that in or is that out, according to your plan?
It would be out. The tree would occur down at the pier. So there would be a tree, but it's not in the city park. It would be down at the pier.
Down to the pier.
Correct. South T Pier.
South T Pier, okay.
I had a few complaints because we didn't do it this year. Mm-hmm. And my granddaughter, for one, loves it, and it's great to see Santa. And she was kind of disappointed, but a lot of people called and said, when is it? And I go, what is it?
Yeah.
And if it's concerned about the cost, we already lit the tree. It's being lit no matter if we're there or not. So I don't understand the cost, and all the food was brought volunteers.
Yeah, so the good news is both the tree lighting and Santa remain at the lighted boat parade. So all of that would be happening down at the pier.
Yeah, but they don't really get a chance to see Santa like they did there. I mean, he sat there and he read stories to them about the night before Christmas, and they all got to come up and sit on his lap. Down there, it's more of a, here he is, yeah, let's go type thing. And I think we're really missing the boat on that as far as helping kids be more into this Christmas spirit.
Sure. No, absolutely. And I think
I would recommend getting it back. That's my recommendation.
That's totally fine, and you're going to make the vote you want. I love this discussion. I think what we're hoping for is when we work with them in partnership, that we'll bring some of our past event to that and kind of synergize it together. Because we fully agree with you. It's really about that spirit of the holiday season there and having those children participate in that way. There's no denying that in past years, the staff here, what they did with our event was amazing. This year, there was a little bit of debate about if we had the budget for it. It doesn't mean we can't bring the budget back for it, but it's really been shoestring. And I think we see a better opportunity to enhance an event that's already ongoing on this pretty much the same day every year.
Okay. The only problem I see is, you know, the boat parade is, what, 2 miles long?
Mm-hmm.
If you got your kids down here watching it here, but Santa's up here, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so their Santa stuff starts about, I think, 4:30, and the boats will begin, I think, at 5:30. So there's about an hour, or excuse me, 6. And so there's about an hour and a half where folks can be down on the pier spending time with Santa and then get in line to see the boats, or just stay on the pier and watch the boats come by.
Okay. And that was that way last year? Because I didn't see it really publicized that way, and a lot of people are really disappointed they get to see Santa. So I don't think if we're going to do it that way, we need to get the word out.
No, this is great feedback, and it's important for us to, again, be able to help them with the marketing of the event as well. And I think that's something the city can bring to it is we do have some substantial marketing expertise, I think, at the city at this point that are ready and willing to help local community organizations spread the word.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have anything to discuss? Now, there's this list on the back of other organizations.
That's the next item.
Good, okay. So we're looking at 5 things right now to recommend to City Council. We sort of make them our signature events. And, of course, something comes up, you know, we could add things to it. We're not limiting it, but we're acknowledging events that we've already had that are successful that we want to participate in, basically. So may I get a motion give me a motion where we recommend City Council to make these our 5 signature events at this point. You say it in the thing.
I'll make that motion.
Do I get a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, 1 sustain.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, could you make sure, I wonder if everybody was on the mic, could you identify the abstention? Thank you, Bob.
Swain. Okay, thank you.
And also for the record, I believe the second came from Commissioner Sorich, so I just want to make sure.
Yes.
It's just important to get those on the microphone for the...
He's been singing with the opera. He's lost his voice.
No worries. We listen to the tape later, so it's good for us to hear your...
Oh, goodness.
Baritone
if there's
12 voices.
Minutes missing, don't come looking to me. Okay, now this next thing that we're looking at... Would you like to start with what we're doing here?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. So I will try to be as brief as I can, but this is an important discussion, so bear with me. Thank you. Just to put it bluntly, since I've been here in June, what I found is that there have been a lot of handshake deals that have occurred in the past with various organizations for how they use our facilities. Almost weekly during the summertime, my facilities folks would come to me, my permitting specialists, and would say, are you approving this the same way we did in the past? And I'd say, show me the policy, show me the document that approved this. Very rarely did we have something like that. As a public administrator, I'm very uncomfortable picking winners and losers related to the use of public facilities. We have an adopted municipal fee schedule that is set by our elected officials, the city council, related to the rental of our facilities. Our council has put in policy in the past various ways that organizations can qualify for either free or reduced rates for use of facilities. And it's my job to carry out those policies and the fee schedule. I've identified for you the various organizations that we found so far because we kind of, frankly, they just keep cropping up. They'll come, we have a new one. So 3 years ago, we had this deal, and can we have it again? It's really hard to say no. You want to always say yes to these organizations. Every single one of them is an amazing organization that does worthwhile stuff for our community. And so it can be hard to kind of have to put your foot down and say, I'm sorry, this is the fee schedule, this is the policy. I think what we're looking for here is clarification on what are the appropriate times to waive fees or provide reduced costs. Right now what we have are sort of two opportunities to provide a fee waiver or a reduced cost. And let me talk about the reduced costs first. We refer to it as direct costs. And at some point in the past, there was a formula devised that calculates directly, specifically, what it costs for the maintenance guys to go set up, what the electricity is for the building, what the cost of the building is, and how much it would cost to replace it. And then you divide that down to that one single use and all that foot traffic down to the $3 or whatever for that hour. That co-sponsorship in 2009 was clarified by the city council to ensure that it was clear what exactly we were providing those direct costs to. And the city council appears from the history of their motion kind of set in place a co-sponsorship event policy that really focused on those visitor-serving events, events that would increase hotel stays, particularly multiple night stays at hotels. Those events would occur and receive the direct cost benefit if the event was held off-season between November 1st and April 30th. If the event was multi-day or a one-day event with financial return to the city, although I'm unclear what specifically that means for financial return, and then also that the requesting party is a nonprofit organization. At the time they approved this, two organizations qualified and were specifically called out by council, the Winter Bird Festival and Dahlia Days. Dahlia Days is no longer in existence as of last year, so the Winter Bird Festival still receives that direct costs. Since 2009, however, also the council said that there was an application process to request direct costs. It's supposed to be done annually, and since 2009 that has not been occurring. So we've basically just been carrying forward Winter Bird Festival year over year, receiving direct costs. It does meet all the criteria. It's just the application process hasn't been followed. And I will be blunt with you. For all of these organizations and Winter Bird Festival, Library, Friends of Library, Eco Rotary, Morro Bay Community Foundation, this year we've basically just had a policy in place that, though it may be uncomfortable for staff, we wanted to hear from the RPC and the council before we made any decisions. And so we've just said, the deal you got last year, you get this year. And please know that we're going to be bringing this forward to have a discussion about what we do in the future. So the Winter Bird Festival, we didn't make them apply for direct costs. They simply received it because they have been. That event, by the way, was last weekend. It was amazing. It's such a good event. They bring a lot of folks in. The other way that an organization could potentially receive probably free costs is through the city's partnership program. The partnership policy was adopted some time ago, and I didn't really focus on it a whole lot in this document, but over this last week I've been thinking about it more. The partnership policy was really, really focused on the city getting stuff, and not much of giving back to that group that might be volunteering their time, raising money for us, fixing our facilities. It really was, thanks for doing stuff for us, sign this contract for doing that. And I think the partnership policy probably, it does kind of hint at a contractual relationship where we could say, for instance, the Lions Club, which does not have a current agreement with us, but has done many projects for us. They do at least 5 a year. They built a barbecue out here, I believe. We could say, for these 5 things you do for us, you get free use of the Vets Hall for your meetings, which they currently do. They receive free use of this facility for their meetings, both their regular meetings and their executive committee. The Morrow Bay Community Foundation, you bring in $35,000 a year. $35,000 a year for low-income children goes directly into our programming to ensure those children can participate. We will continue to provide you with free staffing, free setup, free cleanup. We'll pay for your audio for Morrow Bay Sings, which is what we did this year and what we've done pretty much every year, but we've never had a contract. I will say that we've had a kind of a hairy year with the Community Foundation in that regard. We kind of wanted to let them know that we're going to do it this year, but we need to have a conversation with council to find out if we're going to do these contracts in the future, et cetera. They didn't really take too kindly to it. They've kind of separated from the city fairly substantially. They appear to be expanding their mission to the whole Estero Bay. And so we'll see where that goes. So hopefully they decide that the children of Morrow Bay are still a worthwhile endeavor and want to keep funding them because we think they're worthwhile. So that's kind of the discussion in front of you. Just briefly, I wanted to touch on some public comment earlier. We actually don't have in our records any insurance from the Eco Rotary. So staff did try to pour through all of our records. As far as we can tell, we don't have insurance. That's not really the biggest issue. The biggest issue is we don't have a current agreement with any organization that does adopt a park that they can receive free use of our facility for meetings. It's also not the case, I don't believe, that Eco Rotary's time at the facility is specific to their adopt a park management program. It's specific to everything they do. And again, they're a very worthwhile organization. We're so lucky to have them here. Mm-hmm. We just don't have anything in writing. They do have, or I should say they did have, an adopt a park agreement with us that expired, I believe, a year or two ago. That agreement did not include use of the facility. So I do not discount at all what Ms. Doherty said about potentially a handshake deal for that use of that space. Probably guaranteed it happened. Happened a lot. It just was the case that we had one person making the decisions for all of our park facilities and management of rec in the past, and it made it easier for one person to make that decision, and we don't have a record of it. Regarding the library, that is one of those opportunities where, based on your direction and council's direction, maybe it's part of the discussion where their community benefit, the value they provide, could be one of those partnership agreements. Right now, we don't really have any partnership agreements. My predecessor wrote a letter, I guess that could have been considered a partnership letter, with Project Surf Camp, which is they help disabled children, actually people of all ages with disabilities, basically come to surf, and it's an amazing program. We provide them with staffing. We don't require payment for permits for that. But we don't have anything in writing now. I think in the past, the rec director may have just given them a letter, said, thanks for doing this. We'll waive some stuff. We should have the partnership policies in place for a reason. We should probably utilize it. So that's the type of stuff we face almost every day. And I think this is just a healthy conversation from the RPC. You don't have to make a decision tonight if you don't want to. We can wait, but it might be good if you make a recommendation to council on what you think about a lower or reduced cost for these. Should we simply uphold the fee schedule? Should we modify the co-sponsorship policy to be more open? Right now it's really specific to multi-day events and nonprofits, etc. Should we have more partnership agreements? Should we shore up the partnership policy to make it kind of a quid pro quo? You fix this for us, we're going to give you some facility rental. Just looking for a little bit of direction from you folks prior to bringing it to council. You also may not have a good direction to give to council. That's okay, too. You can share your thoughts, and we can bring those to council as just you had a discussion, and here's what we said, and council, help us out.
Yeah. Okay, I have a quick question or two. When somebody comes to the city to get insurance for an event, do they have to buy their own insurance, or do we have an insurance rider that you say, okay, for a day, the insurance through us costs you $100, so they don't have to do all the run around, go to an insurance company and get their own policy?
They can either get their own policy, it must qualify with our insurance requirements, or right. We do have the ability to go through a service for them and purchase a policy, and we charge them for that.
And is it a discounted rate because the city buys so much insurance from the – no.
It's a separate individual type of policy.
Is it expensive? Or can we ask what it costs for a day?
I think it's probably cheaper than a private policy.
Yeah, $100 and $200.
Yeah, it's about $100 to $200.
Okay, sometimes so it's not terribly unreasonable.
Private insurance might cost you $300 or more. Just depends on the event, type of event.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is there a difference in the insurance when the organization is required to pay a fee for use of a facility versus allowing someone to use it at no cost?
No. Typically, the way the fee for insurance is calculated is based on the type of the event. So a wedding reception with alcohol is going to cost more money than three people meeting for a juggling organization.
You use chainsaws?
I'm just aware that in a regular park setting, if there's no fee for use, then insurance liability on the city's part is a non-issue. The moment that you charge them for use of a park, then it becomes quite a liability issue, and then insurance is usually attached to it. So it might be worth finding out if if we have no fees or no insurance, which I see listed on a number of these organizations, just if it's specific where we would need it or not, or if it can be waived.
Basically, the city has a policy in place right now that you need insurance to use our facilities. And it's a major liability issue for us. Regardless if they pay to use the facility or not, they are creating liability by being there. And so that's a recommendation of the city attorney's office. Over the last few years since we've had, year and a half, 2 years, since we've had the new city attorney in place, that's been a really large focus to shore up and clean up is getting insurance in place.
Thank you. The other question I have, a clarification. I think I heard you say that there is a procedure through which anyone can request use of facilities for a reduced fee or for no fee. And yet, even though we have this ongoing relationship with many entities, that there's no documentation. Did I get that?
Somewhat. So, and I know I speak very quickly. So, always let me know if I'm going too quickly. I try to say that every meeting. I didn't this time. We have a co-sponsorship policy that's very specific at this time, based on a 2009 council decision. It's got to be a multi-day event. Off-season, so between November and April, multi-day, and a nonprofit. And it's really focused on events that are, frankly, visitor-serving that are going to bring people here and they'll stay in hotels. That disqualifies quite a few organizations that have any type of... So, for instance, and I'm not trying to pick on Eco Rotary, it's just it's a good discussion for this type of local group that would be substantially, frankly, harmed by having to pay for their use of our facility. So I'll use them just... because they could be lost. They might go somewhere else. But they wouldn't qualify for that because this is their own local personal meetings to talk about their eco-rotary business. They're not going to bring people in for the shoulder season for that. It's not going to be a multi-day event. It's literally just their business meeting. So they wouldn't qualify for co-sponsorship. Where they might qualify is in the partnership policy. And that is a separate policy from co-sponsorship, where partnership really is... what are you going to do for us? And maybe we can do something back for you. And so that's potentially an avenue where we can recognize the volunteerism of a lot of these organizations, and for that, potentially they get use of space. The trick we have, and I didn't really touch on it, is right now we don't have any of these agreements, so are we gifting public funds, which is not allowed. That's illegal. So are we giving a benefit that we're not supposed to be giving? And not every group is getting it. It's really tricky. It's kind of uncomfortable for staff to say, you get it, but you don't. That's been happening. And that's what we're trying to clean up is we want to, as difficult as it is, we need to try to come up with some solution that best fits the whole community and is a policy that staff can always go back to and say, this is our policy for our local groups and all that. Right now we have a fee schedule in place that has a charge for resident and nonprofit groups for use of our facilities or parks, and has a charge for non-residents and for-profit groups. And these groups are kind of out of that. They're not paying for it at all. In my opinion, right now, we probably should be charging them based on the fee schedule. But like I said, we've just simply said status quo for now while we have this discussion.
So you're actually saying that in the past, by doing what you've done, you've set some precedents.
I wouldn't say there's any legal expectation that they receive free space anymore, but I do believe we've set an expectation. It's really hard to change these types of things at the staff level particularly, after five, you know, between 3 and 15 years of the same thing. That's really hard administratively to do. And so as staff, we always want to be really mindful to go back to what's been adopted by council. What are the rules? That hopefully that helps keep us out of those long-term situations in the future. So this isn't an easy discussion because of that. We're going to kind of be pulling the Band-Aid off, but it needs to happen. Yeah.
So basically we're saying what I see is a priority of criteria.
Potentially, yeah.
Okay. Do we currently have, you know, as we were speaking of naming items, you listed categories that you had to meet in order to qualify. Do we currently have that, a list, so the staff, when some organization comes in, that organization already knows the criteria they have to meet in order to get a reduced or a free facility?
Currently, the only specific adopted policy for a reduced rate is the co-sponsorship policy, and they would know that. But again, most organizations don't qualify for it. We haven't really, the partnership policy is kind of quiet. I don't think it's been utilized a whole lot since it's been adopted. So most organizations probably aren't aware of the opportunity to do that. I think it definitely is incumbent on staff to actively seek partnerships. They're very beneficial for community governments to partner with local groups and even outside groups. It helps us reduce costs. It enhances just overall community well-being to have partnerships. But we haven't, as far as I can tell, actively sought partnerships in a contractual manner, no written agreements.
Well, yeah, I have a question. So the partnership, is that going to be the same for A through Z, or is each organization going to partnership but have special things they can go for, or how is that going to work?
The current policy is fairly fluid. It's fairly flexible. It basically says, let us know what you want to do for us. And then we will write an agreement. If we agree that we like what you're going to do, we'll write an agreement recognizing what you're going to do for us. And I do think it does provide for an opportunity to say, and it doesn't say this explicitly, but I think it offers up the opportunity to say, and you can use this space for your meetings. That would allow. So it's really saying, it's an odd document, I'll be honest. It's kind of weird. It says we like partnerships. We think they're valuable. We'd love for you to partner with us. We should actively seek partnerships, and then we'll write a contract for that partnership. So it really does leave a lot of leeway for staff to develop a partnership in a contractual manner, and then we would bring that to council probably for approval. Probably RPC as well to get your recommendation if you like that idea for that facility or that park. But there's nothing in there, no specific set criteria for any one type of organization that would be the best fit for a partnership. It's really case-by-case basis.
Then I also hear you say that currently with organizations we do not have written documents?
Correct. And probably the best example of that right now is Project Surf Camp. It's an amazing organization. We kind of consider them, even currently, we consider them kind of part of recreation. They are a recreation opportunity for the city of Morro Bay. They do bring a lot of visitors as well. And so we've had a partnership with them over the years. We have city council members that volunteer for that. We have staff that volunteer for that. They don't pay permit fees. But as of right now, there is no contractual arrangement. They're very interested in one. They would love to have a written document that spells that out. We keep their trailer actually on city property as well. So we hold it for them. And we're happy to do that. But again, we should probably have it written down.
I would think.
Wait, so would a partnership cover most of these organizations? Is that what we're saying?
It could. It may be that we want to maybe shore up that policy to make it not so flexible. It's so open-ended that I guess from a staff concern, anybody at any time could say, we're going to partner with you and give us something. And maybe we should have some more set criteria for what those partnerships mean.
Well, what do they bring to us?
I think also probably we should write in there what are the types of things the city is interested in partnering back to.
Right. So I see stuff like here, like the Coast Guard and NOAA. I mean, yeah, they're great people to have when there's an emergency, you know. So I can't see, you know, denying them a space to meet. I mean, they're talking about
sure. And how so there's two types of if you look at your chart,
coast to clean.
I've listed out for you obviously on one page a lot of groups that get receive free or reduced. Those are kind of included in this list as well. If you look just the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there's six at the top. Those are the ones that we have no like written agreement with right now, other than Winter Bird Festival, which receives direct costs at council approval. We have no written agreement with them right now to use our facilities. The bottom ones where you see recreation, harbor, fire, public works, those are actually more like city meetings that city staff should be scheduling on our calendar mm-hmm. for use. But what's happening right now is the outside organization we're partnering with is coming to Recreation Services and saying, we need the room for this time because we have a meeting with Harbor. We're just gonna fix that to make sure that those are internal requests, that the staff of the city is actually acknowledging that these are partnered events.
Okay.
What we're more focused on are probably those top ones. There are some, I would say recreation and above is what we're talking about today. The rec ones are some. There's some handshake deals. There's the Slow Chess Club. They're definitely out of Slow, but they manage the chess board for us during the summer. Correct. They opened it up for us and all that. And then they also have a chess tournament. We've been waiving the permit fees on that. We have no written agreement for that. It's just we've almost considered it one of our own recreation programs for that tournament, and thus waive the fees. But that's been made at an administrative level with no policy direction from council at all. We know what our specific city programs are. They're in the budget. It doesn't mean we don't have some great opportunities to partner with these organizations, but we should have a partnership agreement. It may be that you don't agree that the Slow Chess Club is worthwhile. I think they brought in 20 people to that tournament. Should we have a partnership with them and not have them pay? The council might not agree with that. I don't know. Part of that discussion is, this is really a policy level thing. It's not really for me to make a determination or any staff which one of these groups is worthwhile to provide free or reduced stuff. It's really a policy level decision for you to make a recommendation to council on and for council to make a decision on. And then once that policy is made, it's much more clear for staff as to what we're supposed to be doing for our work.
Okay. It seems that perhaps the organizations that we've had doing a partnership with for a number of years and ones that you've indicated we do not have any written material, an evaluation of those groups, if we are considering those groups to continually be outstanding groups to be partners with, putting together a written document based on past practice seems that something could be done with that. Currently, a more serious question I'm having is that just what you were bringing up just now. Who determines what organization in the future has the credibility, the things that we are looking for, that we give them special consideration? I see it two levels. The older groups, like the Bird Festival, it seemed just put it in writing, what we've been doing for 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it's been. It's the other organizations that seem to be more of an issue for us.
In terms of developing the policy, it seems the quality of the relationship or the dynamic of the relationship that we have with them, and in particular what they seem to have in common, may be exactly the algorithm we use to determine who else may qualify or not. Not sure if I said that clearly.
No, you did.
Okay.
And that might be part of the staff's challenge is what, in terms of that algorithm, let's get really geeky, in terms of that algorithm right now, what matches? And just to go down the recreation list right now, not a whole lot. Cap and Jimmy doesn't pay permit fees to stand at Anchor Memorial Park and play his instrument and for the community and for visitors. That he's just a performing musician who basically plays for tips. It's pretty neat to see him out there, but since 1993, we haven't had him pay any fees to do that. Anyone else who wants to do that will pay a fee. So now we're picking winners and losers, right? Project Surf Camp, I've gone through that. The Whitecaps Band, even our current staff, there's a long history here, but we need more research. We don't actually know why this is free. It's a local band. We think it could be possibly a veterans group, and that's why, specifically related to this facility, there's information related to the deed where veterans groups can come here for no cost. The Slow Chess Club, I recounted that a little bit. There's not much in common with Cap and Jimmy or Project Surf Camp for the chess tournament. Maybe more in common with Project Surf Camp and the chess club, so I'm thinking out loud a little bit. We consider the Project Surf Camp almost like a recreational program for the city. And I think, trying to think as my predecessor, we may have thought about the chess tournament the same way. But it's one tournament for 20 people. Our programs typically are long-ranging, months on at a time, you know, six weeks at least. You know, excuse me? The last one was about, I think, 20 people.
Yeah, they set it big and then
had not very many. Yeah, yeah. So this they've been. My example is they used to be bigger. They're getting smaller. The Estero Bay Youth Football, that we consider that a recreational programming partnership as well. But again, we need to do probably an agreement with that. So it's kind of hit or miss. Eco Rotary, that one, they're providing a service to the community in terms of the Adopt a Park program. But there are other groups that also do Adopt a Park that aren't receiving free use of facilities. And so, again, do you think as a body that it's worthwhile for Adopt a Park program groups to be able to use our facilities to have meetings? In this case, a little tricky. Is the meeting related specifically to their Adopt a Park program work, or is it related to their other endeavors? So I believe Eco Rotary isn't just having meetings specific to Adopt a Park program. We haven't told them they can or can't. You know, got to be really specific about what you're talking about in our room. It doesn't make sense. But if we're offering to them, should we offer it to everybody, or should we offer it to nobody? The Friends of the Library, I mean, my wife especially is super addicted to their book sales. So we go in there and we buy way too many books, and then we try to figure out where to fit them. And then we read 75% and then give them all back, and they make money. So it's a good deal for everybody, right? But there's no current written agreement in place related to why they receive some reduced costs for stuff. I believe that's a one-day event. It is a one-day event for the event itself, so it doesn't qualify technically for co-sponsorship, but they have been receiving direct costs the day before. So the way we set that event up is the day before they need to come set up. They set up fairly early in the morning, I think around 10 o'clock. They need to do it earlier because the folks that help carry the heavy stuff aren't available later in the day. So the day before they set up their event and then they leave, and that room then is no longer available for us to use for anything else or to rent out for money. We do charge them to come set up at direct cost, and then once they're gone, we stop charging them. So overnight they're not charged for the use of the room. We probably wouldn't charge anybody beyond 11 o'clock, but from say noon to 11 p.m., that room could have been rented for something else. We normally would probably charge a fee for that, and we don't for the day before. The day of the event, they pay full costs and all that. But there's another kind of, we've created these relationships. And so is it a question of the type of community benefit they provide? And so maybe they should continue to receive that. Should that be a partnership agreement, for instance? Morro Bay Community Foundation, we've gone through that one. It's very clear what the community benefit is. Over half of the children in our community are on free or reduced lunch. We do have a lot of low-income children, and they probably otherwise wouldn't be able to afford participation in our public recreation programming were it not for some of those awards. So there's obviously a benefit. Should we continue that partnership? And if we should we put it in writing? So that's kind of what we're looking at, you know, is should we just say, yes, you're going to provide us with a benefit, we're going to give you some free stuff. And at that point, I don't actually consider it giving them free stuff. I consider it almost like a payment for the service they're providing to us. So not to be pejorative about it, like we're just giving you something for free, because, again, gifting of public funds is not allowed. But it's basically they're providing a service. Should we provide them something back? So maybe there are some levels, if I could suggest to you. One level is the type of public service or volunteerism they provide. If you agree with that, that does mean that there are many other groups that do provide volunteer services that would receive either free or reduced as well. So, for instance, Morrow Bay and Bloom, Morrow Bay Beautiful, they both do immense work in public spaces to beautify the community. So much so that Morrow Bay and Bloom has been recognized nationally and may be recognized internationally. Or I shouldn't say their group, Morrow Bay itself. They've brought national recognition to Morrow Bay for our beautification. They don't receive free stuff right now. However, we do have the Citizens Beautification and Heritage Community, which is not really technically a city committee, that does receive free space, but our Public Works Department is in charge of that committee or connected to it in some way. So, again, a staff person should be coming to us and saying, we're going to rent that. So that's an outlier. But Morrow Bay and Bloom does stuff. The Teen Action Center does, Teen Action Club, so that's more of a city thing. The Eco Rotary, they're all doing Adopt a Park. Should they all receive free use of facilities, and in what way, how often? Or should they receive reduced costs, in what way, how often? We probably should shore up at the staff level just clarification on the co-sponsorship policy related to the Winter Bird Festival, for instance. We should make sure they're probably applying to us annually for direct costs. They probably have no problem doing that. Morrow Bay Community Foundation, that's almost another level. That's another type of service they provide. You know, on one, you have this physical service of Adopt a Park. On this other one, you have this monetary service of fundraising on behalf of low-income kids. Now, to be clear, that's not technically a direct benefit to the corporation that is the city of Morrow Bay, right? They're not – if those kids don't participate, that money's not coming to the city. It's not coming to fill our coffers. It's coming to help those kids. So that is technically a community benefit direct to those children, not to the city. Is that still something we should have a partnership agreement on? So that's something you could make a recommendation to council on if you chose to do so. You could say that's so important to the community itself that the city should recognize that through a partnership agreement, and that's the type of agreement we like. So we recommend that to the council. These Adopt-a-Park programs are so important that we think you should either modify your Adopt-a-Park program to recognize some free use of space for meetings or include them in the partnership policy. And you could recommend that to council. So those are some of the types of things you could do. You could also say, we appreciate their volunteerism, but we also have to at some point rebuild that facility, and this money is helping us maintain it. So there's some balancing in regards to the conversation.
Well, it seems to me the first step needs to be that every organization has a written agreement, because the hope would be that these organizations will continue to benefit the community as we move forward, and we may all leave. We may not be here. As in your case, you've come in relatively new, and all of a sudden all these people are coming and saying, we have these deals. So it seems to me this step one, before we even get to who gets the partnerships, we need to have in place written agreements ready for any group that we partner with or any group we provide reduced fees for. Everything, there should be a written document for every action that we have with any organization outside the city. That should be almost mandatory. It has to be.
Staff agrees.
Because
fully agree.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the step one. Before we even go any further, that has to be something
right.
That has to be done.
But the question here is, we don't have the document to give them right now.
That's right.
So we
better
have to come up with
step one.
What are the parameters? What are the different levels of participation?
Well,
if it's something that benefits the community, should they be granted favored nation status?
But we've already indicated there's organizations that we've been that have been doing it for 6, 7, 8 years.
So they should be grandfathered?
I'm thinking that we put together the reasons why we have been doing this for 6 or 7 years.
Well, yeah.
And put it in writing. That's the contract.
So perhaps, if I may, it sounds like what you think would be appropriate is for staff to do some more work on here's each organization, here's maybe what they provide to us, if they do provide something. And maybe we bring that document to the council to say, here's what they've been providing to the city. Council, do you agree with providing them some type of use, low cost or free use. Is that maybe that your direction?
Getting closer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. We have this ongoing relationship, and they've been a part of the city. And I heard you say that the current partnership policy is basically vague enough to allow us to justify the relationship that we have and their use for either for no fee. Did I get that?
I do believe that's the case. I would want to. It's probably not about that's. It was adopted, I believe, before the previous city attorney was here. I'd have to go look at that. But I really, really appreciate his expertise, and I think it would be important for him to do a once-over on and get his thoughts on that. But I think that it is appropriate that if we're going to allow for free or reduced use of our space of any facility or park, that we have in writing why we're doing that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is to indicate that we're not gifting public funds. They're providing a service, and for our payment to them, if you will, is that. So we're not giving them something. They're providing a service. It's that's that contractual arrangement. So I do personally believe that that's the case. Yes.
Right. And then the other piece is the development of a policy to kind of fill in that area between. Bear with me. Yeah, a policy which helps any new folks who come and request it. To have a relationship with this, that we have a guideline to determine whether they qualify or not.
Kind of like a similar use aspect.
So if I could recount, it sounds like, again, more research on what each organization provides to us, and that would be, I guess, our immediate supposition as to why they're receiving this type of benefit. And we're kind of talking about grandfathering, where we say, this is why we've been doing it. It probably would be appropriate for council to reaffirm that we have those relationships. And then we want to set up some type of criteria as to new relationships, if I've got that. And I think we may have that in the partnership policy, but it may be good for us to bring that policy back to council and have them take a look at it to say to see if they think it's too vague or if we should shore it up. And then staff would work on that with council.
I think what we need to do especially is the partnership policy should be listed. This is what you need to do to qualify. And then maybe we could break down the nonprofit, donation of money, or the different categories there. But that way, each organization, they know before they get into the program what's needed. And they can write up the report saying, this is what we're going to do to try to qualify for your reduced fee or free fee, whatever it works out to be. And that way, like right now, every organization has no clue of what they need to do to provide you with information to qualify, other than write a little statement, and then you read the statement, you decide, yeah or no. I think there should be some definite guidelines. This is what we need, this is what we need, this is what we need to qualify. And then, as far as the grandfathering, maybe if we do grandfather, I should think we should put maybe a 5-year limit on it so that everybody gets on the same track. And that way, every organization, you can't say, well, Lions gets it free, why can't we get it freer? You know, the Rotary gets this, how come we can't? We're the same group organization and all this type of thing.
So what if Lions would never do this, but they, you know, over that 5-year period, they decide to stop doing stuff for the city, but we're still giving them free use of space. That's a hypothetical. I just want to make sure Chuck Stoll doesn't come to me later and says I was knocking the Lions.
That's right. Like I say, it should have the requirements there, and if they fail to meet those requirements, then they're no longer allowed this benefit.
I would, if I could interject really quick, I'm not it's up to you if you want to make a recommendation about grandfathering the past groups, but I do want to point out we actually have basically a busker, if you will, someone who plays an instrument, stands at a park and is not permitted. I'm not sure if that's the same type of community service as Eco Rotary that cleans up one of our parks so our staff doesn't have to do it. So I thought I'd maybe suggest that we, again, recap each of the groups, what they receive, and the supposition as to why. Maybe we bring that to council and see if they think that those groups should continue to be grandfathered. And then the way we've set up the council meeting is they're also going to have a similar discussion to you, hopefully, to give us some direction. We're not going to probably make a decision that night. We're set in February for them to have this discussion, and then I think we have we would bring back to them in April whatever direction they provide. So we may have a very similar discussion based on some of what you've just given me. I'll bring this to them and say, here's some stuff RPC's thinking about. every organization has to have a written agreement. We'll recap which groups are doing what for us and why we think they're getting that benefit. Obviously, we will reach out to each of those groups to see if they can confirm for us why they think also they're getting that benefit. We'll have your recommendation to council that some definite qualification guidelines are included for how we come up with partnerships and have some type of limit of their qualification to where they need to reapply. Council, if this is what you recommend to them, which I think is a pretty sound start for their conversation, they would take this up, they would consider your recommendation, they will give us more direction, we will work on that and bring it back to them in April. And hopefully we'll all have this set in place prior to the new fiscal year that starts July 1st. That's our real goal.
Okay, my only question on that, say for instance, I'm in the Morro Bay Community Foundation, they're now called Estero Bay, Community Foundation of Estero Bay.
Yeah.
And so we have work, fundraisers planned, but if we wait till July to figure out what's going to happen, it's too late, if we're going to have to pay a lot of money for this where we didn't before, to really make these fundraisers beneficial.
So we've been working with the foundation in advance, and like I said earlier, all the organizations, we're keeping past practice right now while we go through this process. Mm-hmm. So we've already committed to any fundraisers before that. We're just going to do status quo. It makes it easy. It's less stressful for them. They do a lot of planning in advance. We also have taken, I think, no pun intended, a lot off their plate with the Dixon Spaghetti Feed Dinner.
Right.
Staff will be directly managing that entire event. We are simply we're welcoming them to come do the fundraiser to help generate their revenue for those low-income awards. But we'll manage the event so that they're not stressed out about having to pay for the cost of that. And that's the city prefers that relationship. It's less stressful on our staff if we have one group managing it.
But I mean, not just them, but any organization that has, say, planning, say, like the Bird Festival for next year, if it's not until July, was that given enough time to say, okay, now we got to maybe come up with money for this function or whatever?
So,
I mean, how far are you growing exclusive
on a case basis as needed
before they have to come up with their stuff?
Yeah, I think you're getting off track. What we're trying to do is move forward.
Yeah, so right now, we have a facility use application process. They come in for rentals of the facility. And what we've said right now is if they come apply to us now, we will simply respect the previous terms of the relationship, even though it's not in writing. We are aware of what they were, and we'll recognize those. So if the Winter Bird Festival comes to us before July and applies, then we would probably recognize that. However, it's the case that the council could make a decision as early as April. And so I'm not saying that we'll wait to July to implement it. My goal is before the next fiscal year, before the new budget starts and we start collecting fees for stuff, I'm hoping that we can have this all cleared up so it's just easier for us as we go into that. This will also give us, I think coming up, we probably will be reviewing the fee schedule one more time as well. I think we're trying to do that in the February, March timeframe.
The fiscal year, when does it start?
The fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th.
Okay, yeah. So we're kind of in a time period here that we've got to see about a policy and some of the alternatives.
It's a perfect time to do it.
The other thing I was thinking is if you had the relationship with any organization, you can, and we come up with the policies, you could put an addendum to that so they're meeting the same criteria that you've already given them. But the following year, you have to, of course, it's all if you're basing it around the fiscal. We're in
no,
a touchy
I fully
area.
I understand what you're saying. I think that's kind of where we're going with it. I would say, though, what you're saying is pretty identical to what we're doing. We're basically saying now the criteria you're doing, we're almost not even considering any criteria. They've had a deal and they're going to keep their deal until we say otherwise, until council says otherwise. And then once the council sets in place a policy, then we will just simply enact that policy. And we will very aggressively ensure that all of these groups are aware of the change.
Right.
This was the first start of the conversation, and I know every time I've been speaking to a group, I've tried to let them know that this was going to be coming to you at the beginning of the year. Obviously, I'm appreciative Eco Rotary saw that and came. They're actually one of the few groups I didn't mention it to, but we've told the Community Foundation, we told the library, Friends of the Library folks, that we were going to be having this conversation because we wanted to make sure they could participate, and we'll continue to do that.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments? So I think we're really looking for is, A, look at the co-sponsorship, to look at that paperwork one more time, and also look at the partnership stuff and see if the partnership contract is what we think is a viable instrument to properly take care of all these things.
Yeah, so
because I guess in this day and age, we really need to have a contract. This is more of a legal thing than a, you know, it makes you feel kind of bad to think that, you know, handshake doesn't do it anymore, but it's just the way of the world. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes,
would you like me to recap for you? I think what I
Please.
Think your direction is, and maybe you could make that in the form of a motion.
Thank you.
If you so choose to do so.
I would surely.
So what I have down is that every organization, your recommendation to council are these things, that every organization should have a written agreement, that staff will recap for them what each organization does and kind of why we believe they're receiving the current benefit. Again, we will work with those organizations to have a discussion about that to make sure it's clear on both sides why we think that. You believe that we should create a definite qualification guidelines to make sure it's clear why those benefits are being received, and that's probably as part of the partnership policy. You recommend that there be some limit, perhaps a 5-year limit on the qualification for partnership, that we redo those or revisit those on some type of yearly basis or multi-year basis. And then finally, perhaps the council should consider reviewing the co-sponsorship policy and its current limitations, which is more focused on shoulder tourism season and all that. And the only folks that receive direct costs right now are tourist-supporting events.
Correct.
So that is what I have gotten from you as a body as a potential recommendation.
Yes. That's our recommendation.
So you can make that as a motion, and I will forward that on.
Make it as a motion.
So moved.
I'm making a motion.
I make a motion that we follow the previous description of our recommendation.
And may I get a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you. Yeah, I think that was the main thing, is we're moving forward with this. It's trying to take care of past things and then have it spelled out better for down the line. But, yeah, it's just the way of the world now. We have to have agreements with everyone we deal with. It's just legalities. Not that we don't want to help these people out, because I know we do. I mean, you look at Coast Guard and things like that. I mean, gosh, you know, so many people depend on the Coast Guard. And NOAA and so many people are appreciate all the things that all these other organizations do for the community. So, yeah, I think it should be on a case-to-case basis in the long run. That's my personal opinion. Because, I mean, organizations that really help benefit the community don't necessarily make us money.
Yeah,
the aspect of change. Yeah, NOAA people don't like change.
Well, but change is inevitable. It happens every day. Because I'm not the same person I was yesterday because I'm a day older. That's change.
Yeah.
So change is inevitable wherever we look.
Correct.
So this is not something to hold down anybody or anything.
No.
It's really to make it better for everybody.
Yeah, you just make sure that these people aren't put out by this, that they don't think that all of a sudden things have changed. You know, we're trying to make this go as smoothly, a transition as possible, to everyone's mutual benefit. And that's the key here, to everyone's mutual benefit. Because that, you know, it's a community. It's not, I mean, the bottom line is the bottom line, but that doesn't make what the community is. It's the people and the organizations and all the effort their people put into making this such a wonderful place to live. So, but boy, I sure appreciate the council's time tonight. You guys really did a fine job. Appreciate it.
Mr. Jefferson, on your last item, future agenda items.
Yes.
I don't have an item I'm going to explicitly say. I just want to remind you that at a previous meeting last year, you added two more meetings to your agenda or to your schedule. Those are in April and August. So typically, you meet on every odd month the third Thursday of the month. You now also do April and August. So you'll do January, March, April, March and April. So we also agreed, and you liked this, that if we didn't have anything to talk about, we don't necessarily have to have that meeting. We're happy to cancel that, but we'll work to see what we have on our plates. There also will be some meetings potentially with the city council itself. There are going to be some joint meetings. I don't think the RPC had one last year with the council, so this is going to be a great opportunity for you to get together with them. You will be hearing likely from the clerk's office as to when that meeting will be. It will be towards the beginning of the year. I think it's in the first quarter. Kind of what we're doing with the council is, the way we set up their schedule is working mid-year, this is the mid-year of our fiscal year, which is, I'm not used to this as well. I usually do January, December for budgeting. I came from a different state for local government. But so for the fiscal year, we're about halfway through, and so now we're working early to devise the next set of objectives that the council will adopt for staff to work on. And so I will be coming to you in March. The council will be adopting their objectives here in probably February. And in March, then we will get together at our meeting and get to look at what are the objectives that are related to REC and what is then the advisory body's work plan for the year. And so I will bring to you what I think is a reasonable work plan for our meetings. So it'll give you a good outline of what each one of our meetings will be. And you will recommend to council one way or the other what you think that is. Then that will go to council for adoption. I believe before they adopt that, I think they'll adopt that in April. Before they adopt that, you will have a joint meeting with them. So you actually have a chance to talk to them about any REC issues and the work plan prior to adoption. So it's we've set up a really good streamlined schedule for setting the objectives for staff to work on, setting your work plans to work on, and then once it's adopted, we're going to go full bore and keep working on behalf of the community. So that's your FYI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And again, we really invite the community to be involved, come down to these meetings to give us their opinions. We work for you. We need your guidance. We appreciate all the input that we get from the community. I believe, are we done tonight, gentlemen, ladies, staff, everyone? Then I adjourn this meeting. Thank you for attending. Have a good night.